Okay, I think it's about time to get started, so I'm just going to go ahead and get going before something else goes wrong. In case you saw, we were troubleshooting getting to the demo machine, so we should have some interesting demos today now that we can reach it. So this session is infrastructure management around configuring and deploying. The session was given at MMS 2012, so if anyone went to this session at MMS, there's some duplication, although I'm going to try and talk more about configuration and policy and some of the dynamic optimization type settings and less about the deployment of the infrastructure. And you'll see as I go through the slides, there are dedicated sessions on a lot of the infrastructure deployment here at TechEd, so it's kind of hard to do a quick slide and a demo which encompasses someone else's one-hour session. So that's one. The focus of this is going to be more around configuring the policy around the infrastructure. And I'll reference what the sessions are that help with deployment of servers, deployment of storage and networking and those kind of things. The other notes for this session is it's not going to cover Configuration Manager really at all. I mean, I'll talk about where it fits, but I'm not going to. I work on Virtual Machine Manager, and this is primarily focused on showing you the features in Virtual Machine Manager. So if you think it's a Configuration Manager session and it's not, you can feel free to stay if you'd like to learn about Virtual Machine Manager, or find a session that's going to be a better fit. So I guess that's mostly about what it's not going to be. So let's just go ahead and get started. I'm going to cover a broad view of System Center today, and then I'll go through some slides to cover how you would do some infrastructure deployment. I'll do a demo about library and library configuration, how you set policy with host groups, and how do you sort of tie all the infrastructure together. I'm going to talk about our private cloud abstraction. I'm going to talk a little bit about upcoming features in Service Pack 1. Today, I think at 5 o'clock, there's a dedicated session for Virtual Machine Manager for features that are in Service Pack 1. So I've got a slide to sort of introduce them, but there's a separate session where we're really going to go into some of a full session on Service Pack 1. So I think that'll help a lot. We can introduce it here. You can see if you might be interested in seeing more. And we'll just work from there, and then I'll have time for questions and next steps. So this slide, hopefully you've seen before and was being covered in some of the other sessions. This really sets the landscape for how all of System Center fits together in delivering IT as a service. Sort of starts on the, let me get through these animations, sort of starts on the left with the app owner who we provide various self-service portals for to either request services through the service manager product or deploy their own services through something like App Controller or the self-service portal that ships with Virtual Machine Manager. In the middle, you've got a lot of the automation delivered through, as you see, Orchestrator and Service Manager in the middle doing approvals and automation. And then on the right side, you have the set of components that are part of System Center 2012 that help you configure, deploy, monitor, and operate the infrastructure. And it's that right side is really where we're going to focus today is how to get the core infrastructure in the data center set up, configured, how you can set various policies to control access and usage to the infrastructure. We'll talk about our cloud abstraction a bit and how that helps hide some of that complexity. And then you can see, so we're way to the right on infrastructure management today. We will talk a bit about the physical, the virtual, and the cloud. Okay, just a quick overview of System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager. How many people have used or know a little bit about System Center VMM, either 2008 or 2012? Yeah? Okay. So these, we used to have a non-Metro version of this slide, so now we have a Metro version because it's all about Metro. And this sort of conveys the four main areas of investment that we took kind of 2 years ago when we started working on Virtual Machine Manager 2012. And they really were around our investments in our own infrastructure, and that's where we delivered things like the highly available VMM server, continued our investments in PowerShell. In Virtual Machine Manager 2012, we went from about 160 commandlets to, I think, about 420 commandlets or something like that, as we brought all the network and storage management features, our PowerShell layer that was already pretty comprehensive, really expanded. A full upgrade, as well as custom properties. And I'm going to show some of the custom property work today and how you can write custom placement rules and leverage custom properties to get some of your placement policies enforced by virtual machine managers. So we are going to touch a little bit on those today. Within the fabric, that's the main area we're going to live today. We're going to talk about the various parts of what we consider the data center fabric and how you can configure and deploy them. I will go through dynamic optimization and power optimization. I'll cover our cloud abstraction, which is how the application owner builds their virtual machines and the apps inside of them. And I am not really going to cover the services stuff at all. I think we have at least two sessions here on VMM services and the service model, so I'm really not going to touch on that at all. If you have questions, if you couldn't make those sessions, we can certainly answer them here or in the booth, but I'm kind of going to stop at cloud. And I am going to cover a new feature in Service Pack 1 for how we delegate cloud that has some interesting applications and expands some of the sub-delegation models that we don't have today. As we looked towards our SP1 release of Virtual Machine Manager, we again had kind of four themes of investment. And these are those themes, primarily driven by both the Windows Server 2012 feature set and focus, as well as their schedule. Although, you know, if you're anxious to use Windows Server 2012, you'll notice that System Center is lagging their schedule. We currently lag their schedule by a couple weeks in the case of this release candidate to our second CTP. In addition, we're a milestone behind them. So they're at release candidate, and we haven't yet released our beta. So I think what you'll see is by the end of the year, we should all catch up, and everyone should be in the market. But right now, we're lagging them. Our CDB2 of our SP1, though, will be available by the end of the week for download for System Center 2012 SP1 that will manage Windows Server 2012. And these are our areas of investment. So again, Windows Server and Perf and Scale. I know that Virtual Machine Manager itself works pretty well for small to medium-sized deployments. Anyone who's pushed the scale of Virtual Machine Manager, I know, has exhibited slowness, because I've probably talked to most of you about it. So I know, and we're addressing that. So one of our goals for the service pack is to increase our scale and increase our performance. So we'll hopefully get, you know, 1.5 or 2 times the scale and a couple times faster at the same time. So it's sort of a 4x improvement, hopefully, in some targeted areas where we're doing that work. And there's also some work, and again, this is stuff you'll see in this afternoon's sessions, around how we can decrease the latency for something happens on a host and how quickly will Virtual Machine Manager know about it, and can you see it inside Virtual Machine Manager, and you'll see some of that work this afternoon. In the bottom line item, you'll see in my slides where I chose to show, I have this bottom line item that shows where you could, there's a session that has more information. I think this session's this afternoon at 5 o'clock. Windows Server, I'm not really going to touch too much in these investments today. I'll talk a little bit about storage, and we have a separate session on storage. You saw a lot about Windows Server in the keynote, and I know Jeff Woolsey's sessions have been well attended, so that information is also available. We're focusing a lot on partners, so we're starting to think of System Center and VMM in particular as a platform that people will build on top of as we get into, you know, 2012. 2007 was our first release, so 5 years later, now we're ready to be more of a platform. So we're doing UI add-ins. That's very opening up our console to let people add to our user interface experience. We're talking to people about delivering their applications as service templates so that it's much easier to deploy apps in the data center. And there's a bunch of various provider models that we have for plugging in your load balancer or your vSwitch extension or your out-of-band control for your hardware so that the different hardware vendors can plug in. Sometimes they drive us, and sometimes they plug a sort of driver or provider model in, and then we can talk to their hardware without having to ship at the same time. And then this focus on multi-tenancy, I will cover this today in this talk. It's one of the areas I work on, and it sort of builds on top of some of this infrastructure and how you do this delegation and policy, which, again, I want to be the focus of this talk. We're adding a new user role called the tenant administrator, and I have some slides later where I'll explain what the tenant administrator can do and how that supports some of the multi-tenancy concepts that the Windows Server features around things like network virtualization enable isolation of tenants, including their network assets, on top of a shared infrastructure. So that's System Center SP1. Again, there's a talk on Virtual Machine Manager in particular this afternoon that'll cover this in depth and do a lot of demos. So just a bit of a word on private cloud. We know a lot of people have a diverse infrastructure, and one of our goals in building the cloud abstraction in Virtual Machine Manager 2012 was to help allow you to have that diversity of infrastructure, but put a consumption layer on top that helps to start sharing in those resources and let you build the cloud how you want to build it. So there were some early talks that we should force the clouds to be fairly homogeneous. Only the same kind of storage, only the same kind of hosts, only the same kind of this or that. And we made a decision to allow that to be pretty flexible at our layer, and then let customers decide if you want to have homogeneous clouds, you can. If we decide they have to be homogeneous, then we made your decision for you. So you can choose to mix and match sort of in this slide. As you can see, it's different types of storage, different types of networks, different types of hosts. It's entirely up to you how you configure the underpinnings of the cloud. But we do have some management constructs we'll cover that allow you to, probably more logical than standardized, but allow you to tag some of the entities and say, okay, there's equivalency in our library, there's logical networks for networking. It allows you to raise up a level from the infrastructure details and allow the app owners to consume the stuff in a logical way and not have to know the details of how the fabric's made up. We'll cover that. Then we deliver this cloud abstraction on top that, again, you can see there's sort of left side cloud is drawing from just one set of resources, and the right side cloud is able to draw from resources in separate data center locations. So, again, that's another layer of flexibility of how you want to build your clouds. Do you want to keep them location bound or not? There's some flexibility there. And then our delegation model within clouds. It's not so much sub-clouds as this picture might imply, but it's resource allocation within the cloud. So it's more of a tenancy model and shared resources as opposed to any kind of sub-cloud type object. But the concepts are the same. And once you've set all that up, you know, the reason for setting all this up and for doing clouds and doing delegation is to enable the self-service so that now the application admins can create their virtual machines. They can create from standardized templates. They can put their applications inside of them, but you're controlling you're controlling the images they have access to, and you're also able to control their resource usage, but you don't have to do everything for them. It's certainly not forced on people who want to use Hyper-V and want to use Virtual Machine Manager. Our cloud layer is optional. I'll show you a little bit about that as well. If you choose to do a self-service type use case, then that's where the cloud comes into play. So it's pretty much flexible. You can work your way into it and leverage it, or you can stay on the fabric and work at that layer. Okay, so let's talk about the infrastructure components. There's compute, there's storage, there's networking. A lot of those come together in the form of clusters. So the cluster is one of those places, one of those lower level building blocks where networking and storage come together with compute. And then we have higher level constructs that I'll show you where we can assign higher level policies to compute, network, and storage. Bare metal deployment. There was a session earlier in the week on zero to cluster to cloud where you start from bare metal, you put Hyper-V down, using Virtual Machine Manager, you can then build that into a cluster, and then you can layer a cloud on top. So, I'm not going to go into a demo here. This deck at MMS had a demo here, but since that is available, I'm not going to duplicate that demo. But I will just talk a bit about how that works. If you missed that session, I don't want to miss introducing these topics because the later stuff I'm going to talk about builds on them. But we'll skip the demo part. We have some other demos that are different. So our bare metal deployment is certainly possible with either Virtual Machine Manager or Configuration Manager. And or tool of your choice. So one of the reasons in Virtual Machine Manager we decoupled bare metal deployment of Hyper-V from the process of creating clusters out of already existing Hyper-V boxes is so you'd have some flexibility there. If you want to install the OS yourself, if you want to install it using Altiris or Config Manager or whatever your solution is. Once the box is running Hyper-V, you can add it to Virtual Machine Manager under management. And then we take a set of boxes and we make them into a cluster for you. Or you can create the cluster out of band and just add the whole cluster to Virtual Machine Manager. So there's lots of flexibility here that can plug into your existing processes or leverage these feature sets. I do want to talk a little bit here about our cross-hypervisor management structure. So in addition to managing Windows Server Hyper-V, we also can manage VMware, and we can manage Citrix Zen Server hypervisors. Our VMware management solution is to manage VMware through their vCenter APIs, which is kind of how they've set it up. That's where the interesting functionality around live migration and those types of operations exist, is through their vCenter APIs. And we do have a fair number of customers that use Virtual Machine Manager to sort of look at their entire set of virtualization, which includes Hyper-V and VMware. I'll talk a little bit more about that, I think, as we go. So this is the process of bare metal deployment, just quickly, sort of in lieu of a demo of it, which takes a while anyway to watch. So basically, Virtual Machine Manager in the 2012 release has the capability to do the OOB is out of band. So we have the capability of doing all the out of band operations against hardware. And this is one of those areas where we have a provider interface for hardware vendors. If they support DCMI or SMASH, we can go against those sort of standards. Otherwise, you can write a PowerShell provider that will do this as well, and we can plug in that way. So it's both sort of standards-based and extensible. And so we can power machines on and off using those out-of-band providers so that we can do things like get the machine to Pixie boot and then get an OS onto it when it's got no OS yet. And then we go through the pretty standard. We leverage WDS. We have our Pixie image loaded on the WDS server, so again, we authorize the Pixie boot, and then our WinPE image comes down so that we can then control how the machine gets built. It's customizable through scripts and host profiles, which I'll show you in our libraries. So we do have a way of standardizing these builds, similar to the way we had virtual machine templates for VMs. We now have host profiles for building out hosts. The way we build hosts is boot from VHD. So you can use the same image for your host as your VMs if you want. Again, downloading the VHD, boot from VHD. We have a driver catalog in our library area as well, so we can put the right drivers on the box after we detect what drivers are needed by that piece of hardware. Do domain join, enable Hyper-V, and now you have a Hyper-V. You went from bare metal to a managed standalone Hyper-V box, and then you can select one or more standalone Hyper-V boxes and create a Windows Server cluster out of them, a failover cluster. Little bit of explanation about why we manage more than one hypervisor. So one of the reasons we want to abstract that hypervisor layer and deliver a lot of our capabilities no matter what your hypervisor is. So again, it's sort of our focus on the application of virtual machine management and less about the hypervisor. We have the network abstractions. Again, so our templates can now say, I need to be on CorpNet, and that can be a VMware VM as when it's realized, or a Hyper-V VM, and we know how to connect that back up to your network. These are the versions we manage. So all the SKUs of Hyper-V. VMware vSphere 4.1, the most common question we hear is, what about the VMware vSphere 5 release? Our Service Pack 1 that's going to come out to manage Hyper-V Windows Server 2012 will also be managing the vSphere 5, so we're going to just take care of that in our Service Pack that we'll release by the end of this year. And then Citrix Zen Server 6.0. So those are the breadth of the hypervisors that we manage. And then this is just a little illustration. You can, again, similar to our thinking around cloud, is you can choose to group these together in one set of policy, or you can segment them. Again, it's a flexible set of configuration of whether you want to mix and match your hypervisors within what we call host groups, which is our organizational structure as well as our unit of policy. And then we can, once you've brought them under management, we, again, it's showing you here, we manage Zen Server and Hyper-V directly to each separate host. So we work with Citrix to write an agent that we could talk to that runs on Zen Server. And then through vCenter, we manage VMware through vCenter. You can split deployments across both VMware and Hyper-V. So that just gives you a quick feeling and a little quick intro for how we do cross-hypervisor management. Okay, so that's at least a brief intro on how the compute structure would work, bare metal deployment, cluster creation, cross-hypervisor support. So that's our compute story around the infrastructure. For storage management, we're doing a lot. I'll be able to show you the results of that. I'm not going to go through and add an array and show you all the discovery, but there is a session, MGT 316, I think it's tomorrow. Might be tomorrow late in the day, so right before the party, I guess, on storage management. It's quite a good session. I know that the Windows Server 2012 storage session was pretty well attended, so hopefully we'll pick up from that as well, because we plug right in. We work very closely with those guys, and we build right up on their standard support. So there's a really good end-to-end story there. We kind of pick up where they leave off. So as you add your storage to, I guess we have two models of working with storage. One is you can call your storage admin. He can carve out LUNs, and he can add them to the host out of band, and you can then mount them as volumes, and they just show up when we discover from the host the storage is there. What we had a lot of customers asking for is, can't we somehow plug in and leverage the power of the SAN array? And can't we hold a pool of storage, and when I provision a VM, map the storage at the point where I provision the VM and don't pre-map it and have it sitting there unused and wait for a VM order to come in today, tomorrow, or next week? So our emphasis on integrating with a lot of the storage management is for just that purpose, is to hold the storage in a pool and map it to the host as needed instead of pre-mapping it and having it sitting there. But either model works. We do use the SMIS for copying. We use SMIS for discovery. We pull in all the information about the array, the pools, and the LUNs, and I'll show you the results of that. Here's a little bit about how that works. So again, leveraging off host groups, and I'm going to show you how this works in the product as well, and that's going to really be the focus of these host groups are our unit of infrastructure policy, that you're going to want to think about how you construct your host groups in order to control your infrastructure. So Virtual Machine Manager engine, you add the array, you add the provider from the array vendor, then we, talking to that provider interface, we can go out and discover all the storage pools and the storage LUNs on those arrays. Then you can also create the pools of storage. We have storage classifications I'll show you, and that's our equivalent to our logical networks. So that's how you bubble up a level of abstraction to present to those app admins who don't know that you have a SAN and wouldn't know how to use it if they did. So you can group your storage. You can assign LUNs to hosts or clusters or host groups by policy. I'll show you that. And we can also create LUNs on the fly. I think I'm losing it. Okay, let's get through networking and library, and then we'll get into a demo here. Hopefully we'll be right on track. About 30 minutes in, we'll hopefully get into some demos so you can see the product in action. For networking, I'm going to talk about the 2012 networking that's in the 2012 product. There is a key abstraction we'll probably talk about towards the end that builds on top of the Windows Server 2012 virtual networking, and that concept forced a pretty big change in Virtual Machine Manager, but I'm going to leave that to Greg to talk about in his networking session, because it's hard, again, to give that talk without taking the full time frame that we have here. But in the 2012 product, we have this logical network concept where you can essentially tell us about your network. So you can tell us that in the Seattle area, this VLAN and this set of IP addresses are CorpNet, and in the New York data center, a separate VLAN and a separate set of IPs all make up CorpNet. And then when someone says, I need a virtual machine on CorpNet, depending on where we decide to put it, we now know which IP, which VLAN, how to connect it to the right network. So the abstraction exists for two reasons. One is to inform our placement algorithms, and the second reason is to remove the need for the people deploying VMs to know the details. So it serves two purposes. What's coming, a little foreshadowing, what's coming in Service Pack 1 is we're going to create a layer above logical networks called virtual machine networks. And then that's the layer that tenants and self-service users will be able to use to create their own network that sits on the fabric, but that network they create can be one of these virtual network bubbles that exists in Windows Server 2012 to achieve network isolation. And that model also allows you to do isolation using VLAN, so it's another management of abstractions. In effect, the logical networking here is, tell us about your data center fabric network, which in the SP1 release can be decoupled from your virtual machine network. And I'll talk a little bit about load balancers as well. So again, the reason we have logical networking is really to attach labels like this, right? I mean, most people, as they talk about their machines, they see, when I was up here troubleshooting my demo a half hour ago, saying, I just need to get on CorpNet or I just need to get on ShowNet, right? Nobody knows what your IP is, where's that IP? You use labels like the DMZ, prod, ShowNet, CorpNet. And that's what we have for logical networks, and I'll show you that. And it just then gets delivered through the cloud abstraction as those labels, and we realize it on the fabric without anyone needing to know the details from coming into it. In addition to the abstraction of the network, we also have a pooling concept now, so you can use Virtual Machine Manager to do your IP address management. So as you create a VM, you can give us a pool of addresses. When we create a VM, we can pull one out of it. When the VM gets deleted or destroyed, we can put it back in the pool, so you don't have to keep a separate spreadsheet, you don't have to keep a separate database for some of the IP address management. We have the same thing for Mac pool management. We ship with the default Mac pool for what Hyper-V and VMware say in their documentation, so when you need to give out a Mac address for a VM, we can also control the allocation of MAC addresses on a per-site basis using MAC address IP pools. And the virtual IP pools go along with our load balancer support. And the load that basically lets you control the front-end VIP address from the back-end address on the load balancer. So you can assign front-end addresses from the front-end VIP pool and give the back-end addresses are just the machine addresses that come out of the standard IP pool. So that's for our load balancer support. And I'll show a little bit about that if I have time. Our focus on load balancer support was around automating the operations that application admins encounter when they need to deploy an application behind a load balancer. In talking to customers building up to the release, it became apparent that actions like this are often, maybe not always, but often, offloaded to the app admin, so a certain amount of control is given to them to do these operations. What we came up with was, we came up in working with F5 and Brocade and Citrix, we came up with an interface in PowerShell for doing the load balancer primitives of creating a pool, putting a machine into a pool, taking a machine out of a pool, and had really good partnerships with those companies. They have all written PowerShell providers for their networking gear. You install that provider on the VMM server, and then when someone says, I need to add my machine to the F5 load balancer, we call the PowerShell command that F5 wrote all the code behind that to do the right thing on their load balancer. But it's a standard interface, so if you have more than one load balancer vendor in play, we can work with both of them. And this is the current list of the providers we work with. We ship with the Microsoft Network Load Balancer inbox, but the others you can get out of band, and I expect more will come online as other companies write those. And this is just a bit about our cluster creation experience. Now that you've got hosts and network and storage, you can now bring it together in the form of a cluster. We do have a wizard in our UI that lets you build a Windows Server cluster out of hosts we are currently managing. Again, as I said, it's a two-step process. So first you build the hosts, then once you're managing the hosts, then you build the cluster. You can automate it all in PowerShell end-to-end if you want, but we're a little too many places for failure for us to try and do it end-to-end without any break. And I'll show you, again, this was covered in the zero to cluster to cloud as well. Okay, let's talk a little bit about library, then we'll get into our demo. So the VMM, since the beginning, has shipped with this library, and it's the catalog of all the offline resources and building blocks for building. It used to just be the virtual machines. Now it's the virtual machines and services, and now it's the virtual machines and services and the physical hosts that are going to run Hyper-V, since we can do bare metal deployment from those. We have these file-based resources that sit on file shares. So the way all of our library is a set of library servers that are Windows file servers and the shares that they're sharing out. And you can then associate libraries to host groups to tell a set of hosts where to pull their images from. And I'll show you how that works. So one of the problems people had before 2012 was you'd build a template and you'd tie it to a VHD, right, or an ISO or something in the library. And that was on a particular library server, say the New York library server. And then you'd deploy the virtual machine or the service to New York, and it would be really fast, right, because the library is local and it pulls that out. The trouble really comes when you try and deploy a service to some other data center where you might have a local set of images, but the template is only referring to New York. So in that case, when we deploy the service, we need to pull the image from New York over to Seattle first before we can start standing up the virtual machine. So we have a pretty straightforward, I'll show it to you, a concept of how you can tell us that objects are equivalent. So you'll still build your templates the same way you always did. We just have a way of you going in the library and saying, these one or more VHDs, I can tag them and they are equivalent. This actually would even work across VMDKs and VHDs eventually. So, you know, it's basically saying, this is my Windows Server 2008 standard build. And there's a way of versioning the resources as well. And as you publish new versions of your resources, since we know which VMs are using the old version of the resource, we can then notify you that these are all the VMs that need to be rebuilt because there's a new base image. And we have an internal sort of notification process for showing you which VMs are built off artifacts that have new releases in play. And then that lets you use replication technologies outside of VMM to copy those building blocks. And then either through PowerShell or manual means, you can then tag all the images, everything that is equivalent you can tag. And then our service templates and placement will then know any of those VHDs is perfectly fine for building from this template. So it's a really sort of flexible way of letting you pull forward your investment. So let's switch to the demo and let's go through Fabric and Library. Okay, so I'm going to start back at servers and just show you a little bit about how Virtual Machine Manager works. Quick just tour of the UI if it's the first time you've seen the product. Down the left-hand side, we have five wonder bars. I collapse them. They do collapse down if you don't want them shown. So we have VM and services. We have the fabric space. We have the library workspace. We're going to talk about all these today. And we also have a job space and a settings space. Again, we'll probably go in the settings space because we're going to talk about user roles. But those are the five main workspaces. And then within Fabric, it's divided up into servers, networks, and storage. The server space, we were talking about these host groups. And the one we're going to focus on the most today is this little privacy host group. So that's the one I've sort of put some information into that we're going to keep going back to it. But it's where you might deploy VMs that have privacy-centric data on them, for instance, right? So you're going to want to set some policy there. I mean, here you can see left side as I drill in, I get a view of the host, and it's filtering the right side of my screen. The other thing, if you've not used Virtual Machine Manager, this upper section has a show group that I'm going to show you today. And it lets you just switch this right side view. So you can switch and see an overgroup of just the privacy group of what's happening in here. Power management, you can see, is enabled on this host group. We haven't saved any time yet. There's host performance on a daily and monthly basis. It shows you agent status in a bar graph. And this is one of the reasons we put this pivot at the top is as you click around the tree, the right side can then filter and change. So you can drill in and get information all the way down to a single cluster. Again, just filtering the data and getting a summary of what's happening in your data center on the server's view. There's also a compliance view. I don't have patch management enabled here. We do have built-in patch management for the VMM infrastructure servers for the Hyper-V hosts. So you just connect VMM to a WSS server, and then we have a separate view where you can see how are your servers compliant with. Here I think it's going to show pretty much as, yeah, you can see the compliance status, the operational status, when it was last scanned, for all the hosts you're managing, but I don't have update management here, but that's what these three pivots are for here in the host area. By way of, let me see if there's anything I want to show here yet. I think I'll come back to here and show. We're going to go through a fair number of these property groupings of the host today and run through those. But so this, again, is how you set up your hosts and host groups and where you go from there. Let's just talk a little bit about networking, and I'll show you our views for networking. So here you can see I've created logical networks for my backup network, Contoso, our little fake corpnet there. The data center network, an external and internal network. I might have a lab network, a management network. Again, I'm able to put these in and define them. I can go through and define network sites. And again, this is where I tie networking to host groups. So I say, here this DCSIM NIC site is representative in all hosts, but I can see that 10.0.0.0 addresses on VLAN 0 are part of the internal network. And this is where I can add a separate entry if I want, and I can say in the privacy group, we use a different VLAN and a different subnet. So now if you put something on internal net in the privacy hosts, we should configure networking differently. So this is where you use, again, that host group structure is how you set the policy for networking, even though the networking is kind of exists at the host level. Now, some of the interesting pivots we have in play at the top here, again, we have an overview for networking. So it shows you what are all the IP address usage that you're doing for IPv4 or IPv6. In the various groups, you can filter here and see which addresses are how many hosts have access to various networks. Here, the hosts are pretty uniform. This is actually a demo environment where we have a test harness called Data Center Simulator that can multiply a set of hosts. That's why everything's pretty uniform here. Because it's a small set of hosts that are multiplied for giving demos of a somewhat larger environment. I can also flip and see how are the hosts set up. So this view prior to VMM 2012 used to be buried in each host property dialog. You'd have to go to a host, come back out. Go to a host, come back out. Now I can see this host has this many NICs, and these NICs are connected to this logical network, and they have this IP address. Search works in here as well, so you can, what can I type? Did I go too far? Should work. So I can see what are the host NICs that are all on network 7. You know, let me drill into here and see if I'm having a problem on this network. What are the hosts on there? Who's got that IP address? So this is a really great view for configuring your hosts and seeing whether your hosts are configured on the right network with the right logical switch. We also have the same view. I don't have very many virtual machines on networks, but we have the same view for VMs that are connected to networks. So here, this VM has a NIC. Has a lot of NICs, in fact. So again, you get the similar view of how are this VM's NICs configured. So you don't have to keep going into dialog boxes. Then you get the full power of the search, sort, and filter here for managing networking. And similarly for services, which I don't really seem to have any here, but if you have services on networks, it gives you that same view. So that's networking around logical network and IP address usage. The Mac pools, as I told you, we ship with the default VMware MAC address pool that they publish as where they give MAC addresses out from, as well as the Hyper-V MAC address pool, so you can do MAC address management. You can create more of these pools if you want to segment your MAC addresses by site. Support for load balancers. Here I've got about 5 load balancers in that are running these are mock and fake load balancers, again, in this test environment, but they could just as easily be F5 or Brocade. And then VIP templates for defining leased connections or round robin, or how are you going to do load balancing? And then I can put these pieces of networking into that cloud abstraction that we're going to get to towards the end, and then basically let people start using these abstract concepts that I'm controlling here on the back end. For storage, here's that view of all the storage classifications. I've done it to tier one, tier two, or the high-level way I've classified my storage. I've then got pools of storage that contain LUNs. And this information, again, is discovered in after I load the provider. Here's the Contoso provider, and hook it up to an array. Then we pull in all the information. You can see here this array has storage pools configured on it, and those storage pools are in these classifications. You can see I have one array using this provider, and then I've set up this storage. We have the same pivots for storage, so you can see again how are the hosts set up for storage, local and remote, how are the VMs connected to storage. You know, what do their VHDs look like? They're dynamically expanding. How big is it? You can eventually see which arrays they're on for doing that analysis, and that's covered in depth in the storage session. So let's flip over to library, an often ignored but very important part of the product. So here you can see in the library, we've got these logical constructs of templates. So we have service templates and VM templates. I'm not going to touch in great detail to them, although we will talk a little bit about them. We have profiles, and here are those host profiles for building out. You can create host profiles that are specific to your how you want to do standardized builds. These look very similar to VM templates, right? There's a hardware configuration of how do you want to configure networking, what are you going to do about disks, how do you want to handle drivers, do you want to load specific drivers with this profile and then use this profile against your Dell servers or your HP servers, your Cisco servers, so whatever you're doing. Here you can create groups of configuration so you get standard builds, domain join, and then where you're going to put VMs. So there's a core set of settings here that you can then do standardized host buildouts when you do host deployments. And then here in the library servers section, you can see, where am I? These are all those on-disk building blocks. And as you navigate down the tree, you can then get into file navigation. From here, I can launch Windows Explorer. If from my desktop I have access to that same share, I can bridge out and take a look. One of the things I wanted to show here, where is it? It's the release and family stuff. Let's see if I have it set the right way. Yeah, so in this environment, what I've done is I've taken, you know, here in this case, two blank VHDs, and I've assigned them a family tag of blank large. That's my primary label, and a secondary label of TechEd as the release. And so now, anywhere that either of these VHDs is used in a template, the other one can be used as a substitution. So the way that works is you go here to the library server and you say, for this library server, tie it to a certain host group. So as you add library servers that have shares, you assign the library servers to host groups, which sort of is a locational representation, then you're telling the back-end engine, when you create a VM in Seattle, use that library server first if you can find the primary object or any of its equivalents. Go ahead and build out from that location. You can then have a library server in New York and set up that association. So from the library server properties is where you set up the policy for where to pull the building blocks from. And then that leverages the equivalency notion, which there's this view of equivalency, which shows you the family and release hierarchy. And here you can see it's set up for these server app Vs, for applications, any of the on-disk, actually the service templates use the same thing. So all of our library you can go through and set it for equivalency so you can tell us how you've built out your library. And I think that's it for the demo. There we go. All right, so now we're going to move a little bit into, in the past, this presentation has sometimes shifted into service templates and building out services on clouds and stuff, but I think it's important to sort of stay in the infrastructure side because we've gotten a lot of questions actually in the booth this week as well about, do we have something that's like DRS? Do we have a way of moving workloads around? If you do, does it require Ops Manager like it used to when you used a ProPack in VMM 2008 R2? So, you know, I thought we would address those here as well. So based on those questions, I dialed up this content this week actually. So VMM 2012 delivers two new features, and they build on each other. So one is dynamic optimization, the other is power optimization. And they're sort of complements of each other in some ways. So dynamic optimization, without using Operations Manager, so we don't have any requirement around Operations Manager and management packs and monitors, we do our own host-centric monitoring of the VM usage, and we kind of cook it and distill it down and keep 10-minute summaries and hour summaries. So we kind of distill the data down so we're not overloading a database somewhere. We keep a watch on all the hosts under management and all the VMs under management. And within a cluster, both of these features require a cluster. Mostly in the 2012 timeframe, that was because the way you fix stuff is live migrate it, and the way you live migrate it is have it in a cluster. Till Windows Server 2012, where they're releasing that restriction, I don't think in our service pack we're going to change our policy. We'll still be at the cluster level, but we'll see what the feedback is on that. So what it basically does is let you automatically load balance the virtual machines across the cluster. There's some policy settings you can tweak around aggressiveness and withholding. I'm going to go through some of those examples. And then power optimization basically does the same thing as dynamic optimization, but it does a bunch of what if. What if there was one less server? What if there were two less servers? Then can I still satisfy cluster overcommit? Can I still run the workload satisfactorily? Can I still obey your thresholding? And if so, keep compressing the workloads and powering servers off. And that works on a that works on a time-based schedule, and I have a demo and some talk about that. So both these things work. It is layered, so placement, which we've had around for a long time, knows which VMs can go on which servers. Dynamic optimization kind of does a packing exercise and uses placement, multi-VM placement on multiple machines to try and figure out a way it could rearrange a cluster to better fit the workloads. And power optimization, as I said, builds on top of that. So they're layered. So here's an example. We have host reserves for placement. If you're using 2008 R2 and you're moving to 2012, there was a change in the way host reserves worked. So in 2008 R2, host reserves were an incremental value on top of a performance counter that we would get from the host. In 2012, the host reserves are a flat sort of zero-based number that you're going to tell us, keep a gig in reserve, or treat this host as a keep a gig for the parent partition. And it was kind of hard for people to match a magic number and a little incremental, so we move to this more simpler flat host reserve. So again, zero-based, you choose what you want, placement will obey it. And again, we will place VMs up to the red line, but we won't ever place a VM that would violate the host reserve. As far as dynamic optimization goes, we have another threshold above placement, above host reserves, that lets you set. There's two ways to set it. There's a resource threshold, and then there's a level of aggressiveness. So this is what the UI looks like. It's really here for reference. I'm going to demo this, so I'm not going to stay on the screen too long. We'll demo it. But basically, you can set thresholds on these sets of resources for dynamic optimization, and then you can set an aggressiveness. And the aggressiveness slider, high, medium, low, so if you say, I want to be very aggressive, then we'll say, even for a 0.2 of a star improvement, which is kind of a funny unit, but placement generates these star rankings, so internally we know what 0.2 of a star means. For just a small incremental improvement at high level aggressiveness, we'll live migrate VMs in the cluster to get a better spot and a better full cluster view. So unlike Pro, which was host-centric, so all Pro knew was this box is in trouble, move stuff off. Dynamic optimization looks at all the nodes of the cluster and all the VMs on the cluster and decides, can it rearrange things or not? So it's a much broader view. There is a PowerShell command for optimize-cluster. You can call it manually if you want, and then it'll, at that point in time, look at the cluster and see if it could do anything. Or you can run it on a 10-minute interval, as you see the above there. You can run it on a cycle of 10 minutes, 60 minutes, however many often you want to, according to your level of aggressiveness. So let's go through an example. So again, here's a set of hosts, which are nodes of a cluster. Again, this is a cluster with four nodes. And I've set a host reserve of sort of 10%, and easiest to think about this for CPU. You can set a memory level or I/O or network or storage here, but it's easiest to think of CPU. The DO threshold, as you can see, completely overlays, so it's also zero-based. So this is not 10% plus 30 more. This is 30%. So as far as readability of the slide, it's kind of hard to show them, but the setting you'd use is 30%. And it's, again, zero-based. So when you had VMs running on your cluster and one of the VMs spiked like this and it ate into your DO threshold, that would kick VMM to say, ah, I guess we should see if there's a better way to fit. And as is often the case, sometimes you move the guy that didn't grow, right? Like the busy guy is harder to move anyway, so sometimes you want to move a different VM. And that was one of the downsides of Pro as well in the old release, is it would identify this VM caused the spike, but that's not always the one you want to move, so this broader view helps to rebalance that workload. And just example number two as well, here's a case where what if a bunch of things spike, what do we do then? And again, we'll try to make it a little better. So, you know, you're not as oversubscribed, so even in that case, even in the case where the other node would be into their threshold, if we can somehow get the load down, we'll still do some migrations. So again, even in this case, that helps to create a little bit of a spot for a little headroom and gets your cluster in a better view overall. So that's another case where we would, again, perform a migration even though it violates the destination node's threshold, but it's by a lesser amount. So again, that's a better star ranking for that VM. So we would do something there. Power optimization has a couple requirements. Again, it's got to be in the cluster. For power optimization to work, you have to have turned on dynamic optimization and enabled it in automatic mode. So you can have DO on, but not running automatically, in which case you can call it manually or call it from an ops manager alert if you want to hook. You can hook DO to ops manager now as well. And based on an ops manager alert, the nice thing is now all you do is say optimize the cluster. So the remedial step you take is a lot easier to do. Then you enable power optimization, and this is the UI for power optimization. It also has thresholding, zero base, separate from the DO threshold, separate from the placement host reserve. And then this would be the schedule where you're power optimizing in the sort of teal colored area, and the white area you're really sort of performance optimized, like your laptop setting, or you optimizing power or perf, or basically the two settings. I'll show you how that UI works. So how that looks would be, again, zero-based 40% threshold for power optimization. Says if I can move VMs and not eat into that threshold, then I should move them off of that node and power that node off. So that threshold, that's what that threshold means. Is it's not so much someone violated it like the DO one, it's more keep that in reserve. If I can still rearrange it and get a node free, then power a node off. Second example would be, what if I'm nervous about power optimization? What if I did the previous chess move, and now something starts spiking, even though it's nighttime, even though I'm in power optimization mode, then what happens? Again, this is where we use our out-of-band stuff we use for host provisioning. And we say, oh, once a VM violates and I have a node in a powered off state, I can power it on demand and do a migration over. Right now, obviously, that the machine has to power on and boot, and so there's some delay there. But we can recover from that situation. You also notice in that situation, I'm really not even into my DO threshold yet, nor am I anywhere near to my host reserve. So it's not like there's any trouble here, but this is a way the system starts recovering into a point where things like cluster overcommit, what if there were a failure, we don't want to be in a bad state, so we sort of start to head down that road. And then it began based on the calendar schedule, even if none of this happened, but all of a sudden it got to be 9 o'clock in the morning and you're done power optimizing, then we start putting those hosts up. Then once all the hosts are on, you're in DO mode, workloads are going to shift around so that you get a balanced cluster again. So that's where DO picks up, where power optimization comes off. We went through this, I think. Okay, so let me just show you what those UIs look like. So the place where you'd set those, it's just right in here. So there's host reserve settings, zero-based. You can set them up to inherit. So if you have one set of host reserves for your whole data center, you can set it at a host group level. You can set it at all hosts. You can have one set of policy for everything, or you can set it per host group. And then dynamic optimization, as we said here, I can inherit, I can override, I can set my threshold for high, medium, low, change the minutes, change the units. And then when I go into power optimization in here, same set of thresholds, and then this one here, I can basically just carve out the area where I want to have performance optimization in play. This is kind of a fun little thing to play with. And I would show a demo of it all happening, but it's one of those frustrating demos where you have to spike the performance and it's not really worth it. So let's talk about custom placement rules. So another new feature in VMM 2012, leveraging our custom properties lets you tell us new properties of the VMs and hosts to consider when we're placing VMs. So it's not just network storage, resources, it's business policy perhaps that you want to indicate. You'll see it's based on custom properties, and there's four levels. There's the must match, should match, must not match, should not match. And as you can imagine, one is a hard constraint and one is a soft constraint, where we would inform you that the host, that if you use the should and should not, then we will put it on a host if it's the only one there, but we'll give you a little warning icon that says, you don't really want to do this, but it's the only host available. If it's a must not, then it's just like the host doesn't have enough memory. We won't put a VM there because you said you can't do it. It violates my policy. Let's just jump in there. And I'll show you how that works, and we can do a quick demo. So on this host group for privacy, I've set a rule that said there's a property called private data. And when the VM has that property set, then it can only put it on a host that has that property set. So that's my placement rule. I think on 14, I set private data yes. This host is capable of hosting private data by my policies. It's secure. It's locked down. It obeys that policy. You can see, in addition to custom 1 through custom 10, which we used to ship with just those 10, now I can create my own custom property and give it my own values. You can see you could use this also if your data is geographically sensitive. If you've got VMs in Europe, you need to put them on hosts in Europe because they've got data that can't leave a certain geographic boundary or political boundary. You could use this same property for that. So I've got the host set that way. In my library, I built a template called a private data VM template. And in that template, I've set the custom property that its private data is yes. So when you're building a VM for privacy, you have to use this template. Now the template is standardizing the deployment as well. And you'll see let's just do this. when I go through create virtual machine, I know that says next. I'm not really going to change anything else. One of the nice things about templates is I don't really need to change anything. I'm going to put it on a host group. Since I started on the privacy host group here, you can see it starts me there, keeps me in that same context because that's where I started this placement from. And now placement's going through and finding out that node 14 and node 4 satisfy my requirements. And if you see node 1 does not, the ratings explanation says, oh yeah, you've got a placement rule that says private data VMs can only go on private data hosts, and this host is not set the right way for that. You know, there might be, some of them have more than one ratings explanation, but here you can see most of these are basically based on my own rule for placement. So that's how you set up custom properties, fill the values, and then define a placement rule that lets you sort of use policy other than resource values to dictate where it goes. This does work through our cloud abstraction as well. So an end user who just has access to a cloud can deploy against a cloud made up of a mixed set of hosts, and through the cloud abstraction, we'll find the right set of hosts, again, leveraging placement through the cloud. Okay, this is our standard workflow of what you do when you're setting up VMM and you just want to get to private cloud. Configure the fabric, which we talked a lot about today. Creating a cloud and then delegating the cloud. I do want to quickly get into that. I think we have 10, 15 minutes left. So this is our cloud abstraction here. We have the main thing we deliver is those logical entities. And you can see this consumer view in blue. A self-service user can only see the stuff in the inner blue rectangle, even though the cloud knows about the fabric. We just don't let some people see those details. And it's things like the logical networks, the storage classifications, CorpNet, gold storage, tier one storage. Those things are exposed. But the actual IP address pools or the arrays that I'm using are outside the view of that self-service user. We've defined capacity and capability abstractions as well to help you further apply policy to the cloud. And so a cloud, you can build a cloud from two hosts and tell someone they can put unlimited VMs on it. So there's an ability to oversubscribe to your fabric, or you can pass through the actual values. And you can set capacity along sort of CPU memory and storage we can compute for you. We also let you use number of VMs because that's pretty easy to count up. And there's a custom quota for back support, for down-rev support, for what we had in 2008 R2. And then capabilities just let me summarize and describe the underlying fabric, like this cloud can run a highly available VM. Now, I can create a cloud on a set of clustered hosts and not turn this on. So I can have some people from one cloud consuming the local storage of the nodes of the cluster and not putting HAVMs, or I can have other people that can run their highly available VMs. And I can let people, I can let it up to their choice. And I'll show you a capability profile. It also lets you shape the VMs. So you can say, on this cloud, you can have VMs from one to four processors, but no bigger, even if the host could or could not support it. Or you can say the range is one to one. So you can set these capability profiles up to deliver the small, medium, and large VMs in discrete elements, or just a range of settings which lets the customer decide, do they want a single proc or a dual proc VM? Do they want a 2 gig VM or a 4 gig VM? You can control that through these capability profiles. I think we've gone through most of that. And then the way delegation works, I'm going to get through this slide. So here's one of our new concepts that's in the Service Pack 1, and it's not in the CDB2 that you can get this week, but it'll be in our beta. Is the sort of teal line item there around the tenant administrator. So in 2012, the release, we had the full VMM admin. You can delegate fabric access. We had the green self-service user down to the far right who's an application admin. And we had this help desk read-only admin that could look at the system for info. But in order to support some multi-tenancy, we're introducing this tenant admin. And the tenant admin is a cloud-only view. And their scope is cloud-only. They can author these new VM networks, which you can learn about in our networking session. But they can also then create their own self-service users. So we anticipate this will be used primarily by service providers, by hosters. And they can create tenants like Ford and Toyota or Blue Cola, Red Cola. And then that enterprise that's consuming capacity from a hoster can sub-delegate within the enterprise consumption of that hosted cloud. And the hoster doesn't need to worry about all the enterprise users. The hoster just knows, I sold this much capacity to this entity. The entity can choose how they consume it. So that's the main reason we added this notion of a tenant in play. And I'll show you how that works in, actually I have a build of, that's later, a later build that we can look at. So let's look at that. Let me switch out of this environment. Let's show you this. So this is the VM and services space. I'm logged in as a full admin, and this is a build that's newer than the CDB2 build. One of the things you'll notice is now I can navigate by tenant. So I've created a Blue Cola and a Red Cola tenant, and they've subsequently created a finance and an HR department in Blue Cola and a marketing and a sales department in Red Cola. And I can easily, using this tree, you can see the right side, filters by who owns which user role has the ownership of those. And this space also has the notion of an overview, so I can easily see that HR's got 5 VMs and finance has 3 and Blue Cola is using 8 and Red Cola has 4 all up and 2 here and 2 here, 1 here. So this notion of tenancy here is in play. And when the tenant admin logs in, and the tenant admin sees just their 2 departments, and they can easily see who's consuming what resources in their departments. They would see just the clouds they have access to. They'll see just their private virtualized network running on Windows Server 2012 network virtualization, and then they see the access of the storage that they have access. So here you'll notice now what we did is we moved. I used to have that storage pivot buried in the fabric space, but now I'm bringing it forward to the VM and services space. So now this guy can inspect his VM storage in a similar view that we used to have only in the fabric space. And similar, I don't think I have networking information in here for this user. I think this guy might have the view for networking. So here you can see I've created the Red Cola, Blue Cola network. These pivots for networking aren't working yet in this build, but eventually that same sort of VM and their NICs would now be lifted into this space. And this customer within Blue Cola, I can create my own network. Where is it? And then on my own network, I can now create, hopefully this doesn't die, it might die on me. I can create my own IP. So we can enable the bring your own IP scenario. So I can just give you a network and you can use the same address space as the other person. And this will be covered in one of our other sessions. But I think this is let me just quickly show you. So a cloud, as we said, the staging cloud is built from all the hosts in the system. I can expose a network in it. I'm the full admin now. I can put a load balancer, VIP profile, storage, library resources, capacity constraints. Again, I can leave it unlimited, or I can say you just get 10 VMs on this cloud. Those capability profiles, we ship it out of the box with the built-in capability profiles for VMware, ESX, and Xen. It doesn't mean this cloud can only run Hyper-V. It really means this cloud is constrained by the rules of the Hyper-V capabilities, i.e., only 4 procs, not up to 8, or whatever the limitations were before Hyper-V 2012 is out. So the way that works quickly, and then we'll jump into time for questions, I think. So here's the capability profiles we ship with, and you'll notice these are locked. You can't change these, but you can create your own. The Hyper-V capability profile says, it's compatible with the target platform of Hyper-V. Again, this is not editable because we ship with it. You can have from 1 to 32 processors in a VM. And this is probably the non-RC levels or whatever. You can have so much memory. so many disk drives, so many hard up to 255 hard disks, the size of the hard disk that's allowed. And it's through these, if I want to create my own, I can create a new capability profile that's single proc VM. And when I create a cloud, if I only put the single proc VM, then no matter who you are, you can only create a single proc VM on that cloud. So again, it lets me restrain how much of my infrastructure capabilities I'm exposing through the private cloud. And you can use our built-in ones, or you can create your own. With that, I think we're probably close to wrapping up. Like I said, I'm not going to do these, actually. We have sessions on services. We're not going to have time to run through these slides, but the two sessions we have are 317 and 321 if you want to learn more about our service deployment on top of the clouds. There's a bunch of links in here for your convenience. Again, how to go download 2012, how to get access to resources to learn more. And then as far as all the sessions we have this week, the breakout sessions we have are listed there. There's some hands-on labs that you can go to if you want. If you have questions for me, my email address is ewinner@microsoft.com. So anytime, or you can find me at the booth today or tomorrow if you have any questions for me. With that, I think we're done, so we can get through the requisite, do your evaluation and win a prize. And I can just go ahead and take questions, and I'll stay after, and I can be in here or out in the hall afterward as well, because I know we're running short. But if anyone has a few quick questions, I'd be happy to answer them. All right. Well, cool. Well, yeah, please fill out your evaluations, and have a good rest of TechEd. Thank you.